year, at least one in four Americans is diagnosed with a heart condition. At that point, there are some very important decisions to make for your future. The harsh reality may be you are left with more questions than answers. This is where the Heart Rhythm Center podcast can help. We are your what, why, and how of palpitations, heart rhythm disorders, pacemakers, and defibrillators. Welcome your host, Dr. Jeffrey L. Williams, board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular disease, and clinical cardiac electrophysiology. The information included in this podcast is for educational purposes only. It is not intended or implied to be professional medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice. Listeners should always consult their healthcare providers to determine the appropriateness of the information for their own situation, or if they have any questions regarding medical conditions or treatment plans.
This is Dr. Williams, and this is What Are Palpitations? Podcast 4, Workup and Evaluation of Heart Rhythm Disorders and Meeting the Heart Rhythm Physician. The first important element of the evaluation for heart rhythm disorders is the type of care provider who will be performing the evaluation. Care providers have varying years of training built upon a foundation of patient evaluation that permits a thorough yet concise summary of a patient and his or her symptoms, medical history, and differential diagnosis. The differential diagnosis consists of the possible diagnoses and order of likelihood that can explain the patient's constellation of symptoms. There is a wide variety of providers with a wide variety of training backgrounds who can evaluate you for a heart rhythm disorder, such as the following. Physician assistants have about 3 years of healthcare experience and a bachelor's degree before they can obtain their physician assistant certification by attending school for an additional 2 years. Nurse practitioners are registered nurses who have completed a master's or doctoral degree program and have advanced clinical training beyond their initial professional registered nurse preparation. A family practice doctor has completed 4 years of undergraduate college, 4 years of medical school, and 3 years of a family practice residency. These professionals usually see both children and adults. An internal medicine doctor, also called an internist, has completed 4 years of undergraduate college, 4 years of medical school, and 3 years of an internal medicine residency. These professionals usually see only adults. A cardiologist is an internal medicine doctor whose training involves 4 years of undergraduate college, 4 years of medical school, 3 years of internal medicine residency, and 3 years of cardiology fellowship. Many cardiologists are board certified in internal medicine and cardiology. An electrophysiologist is a subspecialized cardiologist who performs heart rhythm evaluations and procedures to implant electrophysiology or EP devices, such as pacemakers and defibrillators. Typical training involves the same training as that for a cardiologist, plus an additional 2 years of EP or heart rhythm fellowship. During this EP fellowship, an electrophysiologist focuses exclusively on pacemaker and defibrillator implantation, as well as the long-term care of these devices. In addition, an electrophysiologist is trained in all aspects of heart rhythm evaluation and care, including EP studies and heart ablations to cure various arrhythmias. Many electrophysiologists are board certified in internal medicine, cardiology, and clinical cardiac electrophysiology. The history of present illness is the most important element of evaluating a patient to determine what the present illness is. It is estimated that over 80% of patients can be diagnosed just by obtaining an accurate history from the patient. One of the most important aspects of the evaluation of a patient with symptoms suggestive of arrhythmia is whether or not the patient is at risk for or has been appropriately treated for significant underlying heart disease, such as obstructive coronary artery disease. Symptoms such as loss of consciousness or syncope, dizziness, shortness of breath, chest pain, palpitations, or exertional fatigue can all be related to heart rhythm disorders with underlying structural heart disease. A typical history of present illness sounds something like this. This patient is a 72-year-old white female who has had 11 episodes of sudden loss of consciousness over the past 4 years. She has had seizure activity witnessed by others, and under the care of her primary care physician, neurologist, and general cardiologist, she has been started on anti-seizure medicine. She continues to experience episodes of syncope. Each episode involves a short period of dizziness and blacking out. This is followed by a loss of consciousness. More often than not, these episodes are abrupt in their onset, occur without much warning, and have resulted in injury at times. They can occur while the patient is seated or standing. They do not appear to be related to meals, dehydration, emotional stress, or any other obvious cause. there are no related symptoms such as chest pain, shortness of breath, or rapid heartbeat. This is a very thorough history of present illness, but there are common elements of the history of present illness that helps us describe a patient's symptom constellation. We can describe the HPI using 7 categories to encompass all elements of the history. Colder as is a mnemonic used to ensure that all the right questions are asked when evaluating a patient. Colder as stands for character, onset, location, duration, exacerbating factors, relieving factors, and associated symptoms, and we will go through each of these. The HPI can be gathered by anyone familiar with patient care, physician extenders such as nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, nurses, or medical assistants may gather this background information. It is not so much how the information is obtained, rather, what is important is that all the information is obtained. The major elements in the history of present illness start with character, which are the characteristics of the symptoms. For example, is it a pressure? Is it a burning? Is it an aching? Onset describes the circumstances or timing of the symptoms. Location describes where is the pain felt and is it felt in any other locations. Duration describes how long the symptoms have been present and how long do they last. Exacerbating factors include what the patient has done to aggravate the symptoms, such as walking, sitting, standing, eating, drinking, or others. Relieving factors are what has the patient done to relieve the symptoms, such as deep breathing, cold water, nitroglycerin, belching, or aspirin. And associated symptoms are what are the symptoms that the patient notices to occur at the same time as the main issues, such as shortness of breath, heart racing, sweating, nausea, or vomiting. The past medical and surgical history helps us to risk stratify patients. Elements of a patient history, including prior heart attacks, also called myocardial infarction or MIs, congestive heart failure, CHF, or arrhythmias such as ventricular tachycardia / fibrillation and atrial fibrillation, suggest underlying heart disease and possibly increased risk of arrhythmia. In addition, there are other non-cardiac medical problems that can hint at risk factors for arrhythmias. Peripheral vascular disease, or blockages in arteries such as the carotids in the neck or arteries in the legs, can also indicate that heart disease is present. Not only can coronary arteries get plaques or fatty blockages, but the heart's conduction system and muscles can also be diseased by a buildup of calcification and/or fibrous scar tissue. Finally, there are a host of medical conditions that can increase the risk of arrhythmia, such as the following. Thyroid disease, both an underactive, called hypothyroidism, or overactive, called hyperthyroidism, can lead to heart rhythm abnormalities. Usually, a blood lab test that evaluates the level of thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH, is ordered. An abnormally high or low TSH can be treated and possibly eliminate heart rhythm problems. Hypertension, or elevated blood pressure, can lead to arrhythmias, commonly atrial fibrillation, and normalizing blood pressure may help decrease heart rhythm abnormalities. Coronary artery disease. Rarely, blockages in the coronary arteries can lead to arrhythmias. And these blockages are usually associated with chest pain, shortness of breath, or other symptoms that occur with physical exertion. Infections. Any infection can lead to arrhythmias. Treating the underlying infection often relieves the arrhythmia. Myocarditis or pericarditis refers to inflammation or infection of the heart muscle, myocarditis, or the heart's outer lining, pericarditis. These may cause arrhythmias. Pulmonary conditions. Lung disease can place excess strain on your heart, and conditions such as pneumonia or blood clots, called pulmonary emboli, may lead to arrhythmias. Alcohol. Alcohol is a direct toxin to your heart and can lead to arrhythmias. Excess alcohol intake on special occasions, we call this holiday heart, can lead to transient arrhythmias. Chronic excessive use of alcohol can lead to heart failure and long-term issues with arrhythmias. Drugs. Use of any illicit substance such as cocaine, heroin, and marijuana can lead to arrhythmias. In addition, any toxic ingestion or overdose could lead to arrhythmias. The social history is used to obtain details of a person's life that are not purely medical. Personal habits such as the use of tobacco, causing vascular disease, alcohol, and illicit drugs, which are toxic to the heart muscle and cause heart rhythm abnormalities, raise the suspicion of serious heart problems. Additionally, personal stresses such as deaths in the family, marital issues, or the loss of a job can increase stress. Many heart rhythm abnormalities are exacerbated by increased stress, decreased sleep, the use of caffeine, alcohol, or nicotine. Conversely, regular exercise, a healthy diet, good sleep habits, smoking cessation, and weight loss can decrease heart rhythm abnormalities. Family history is very important. The saying, "An apple does not fall far from the tree," is used to emphasize the importance of family history. We are trained to specifically ask for family histories of heart disease and the ages at which it occurred. The relative must be a blood relative, not an in-law, and we are mainly concerned with first-degree relatives, namely mother, father, sister, and brother. Common heart problems that can be transmitted across generations include coronary artery disease, heart attacks, atrial fibrillation, and sudden cardiac death. Sudden cardiac death refers to an unexpected and sometimes at a very young age death that was likely related to the heart. Additional family histories that may suggest sudden cardiac death include unexplained seizure disorders and drownings in relatives who knew how to swim. During sudden cardiac death, the heart muscle stops pumping, causing the brain to experience a lack of oxygen and possible seizure. Family members who have experienced sudden cardiac death and miraculously recover in seconds may be misdiagnosed with seizure disorders. In addition, some conditions that can cause sudden cardiac death are triggered by vigorous exertion, for example, long QT syndrome. If a person with such a condition was swimming when sudden cardiac death occurred, the death may be mistakenly called a drowning. The physical exam, including vital signs. Vital signs include heart rate, or heartbeats per minute, blood pressure, respiratory rate, or breaths per minute, and pulse oximetry, shortened to pulse ox, which measures the oxygen content of the blood. The heart rate's normal range is 60 to 100 beats per minute. Bradycardia refers to a heart rate of less than 60 beats per minute, but very physically fit people can have normally slow resting heart rates of less than 60 beats per minute. Tachycardia refers to a heart rate of more than 100 beats per minute. Generally, your heart rate accelerates to between 100 and 120 beats per minute during a brisk walk or when climbing steps. This is called sinus tachycardia and is a normal response to exercise. An abnormally slow response to exercise, an inability to get the heart rate above 100 beats per minute with associated chest pain or shortness of breath, can indicate sinus node dysfunction and is called chronotropic incompetence. Abnormally fast heart rates can indicate abnormal heart rhythms that need medical treatment. The following describes a very common arrhythmia that can result in significant heart rate variation. What is atrial fibrillation? Atrial fibrillation is the most common arrhythmia seen in a typical electrophysiology practice and often presents with an abnormal or irregular heart rate. Almost 5% or 5 out of 100 patients older than 60 years of age have atrial fibrillation, and the percentage increases almost 0.5% per year, so that by 80 years of age, up to 15% of people may have atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation refers to the top chambers of the heart, the right and left atria, fibrillating or beating rapidly at 300 to 400 beats per minute. This rapid beating is transmitted to the lower pumping chambers of the heart, the ventricles, and causes most of the symptoms attributed to atrial fibrillation, such as palpitations, heart racing, chest pain, and shortness of breath. The most concerning aspect of atrial fibrillation, aside from the aforementioned symptoms, is the risk of stroke, which are blood clots sent to the brain. Atrial fibrillation causes the atria to stop contracting and just quiver. This loss of pumping can lead to blood clot formation in an atrium. The diagnosis of atrial fibrillation, or atrial flutter, which is a closely related heart rhythm disorder, should lead you to a discussion with your doctor about anticoagulation to prevent the development of strokes. Blood pressure. The ideal blood pressure in most patients is 120 over 80. The top number is called the systolic blood pressure, and the bottom number is called the diastolic blood pressure. When a patient has elevated blood pressure, changes in diet and increased exercise can often normalize blood pressure. Sometimes, changes in diet and exercise are not enough, and most doctors treat blood pressures above 140 over 90 with medication. It is important to note that a blood pressure above 130 over 80 may be cause for concern. Respiratory rate. The respiratory rate refers to how often a person breathes in 1 minute. The normal rate is approximately 8 to 14 breaths per minute. Shortness of breath, or difficulty breathing, is often associated with an increased respiratory rate. Pulse oximetry is used to determine the oxygen saturation in the blood. The normal oxygen saturation is greater than 95%. Heart patients can have abnormally low pulse oximetry readings due to the presence of heart failure, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease called COPD. Weight is very important to obtain because patients who have heart failure will often gain weight. Close monitoring of weight can allow a patient to alert his or her doctor of an impending heart failure exacerbation, generally, rapid weight gain or loss of more than 2 to 3 pounds in several days corresponds to fluid weight. In addition, abnormally high or low body weights may place patients at higher risk of heart rhythm abnormalities. Pertinent studies. There are many tests that your care provider may want to obtain to evaluate your symptoms. A chest radiograph or chest x-ray is obtained to ensure that the lungs and heart are in suitable condition with no obvious abnormalities. The electrocardiogram is obtained to evaluate for any heart rhythm disorders or electrical system blockages. An echocardiogram, called ECHO for short, is used to assess for any decline in heart pumping function, ejection fraction, or EF, as well as to assess for heart chamber sizes and any valve disease. Stress tests may be performed prior to an echocardiogram to assess symptoms that may indicate coronary artery blockages. Reasons for stress tests include the following. 1. To see if symptoms such as chest pain or shortness of breath are due to underlying coronary artery blockages, or 2. To assess for possible side effects of antiarrhythmic medications. Finally, baseline blood laboratory tests such as kidney function, blood counts, and blood coagulation studies are performed to make sure there are no other medical conditions contributing to heart rhythm disorders. An important blood laboratory in heart rhythm disorders also includes thyroid-stimulating hormone, or TSH. I hope you've enjoyed the workup and evaluation of heart rhythm disorders and meeting the heart rhythm physician, and hope you'll listen to Podcast 5, What Are the Common Supraventricular or Top Chamber Tachycardias? Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Heart Rhythm Center. If you have enjoyed this episode and would like to access extensive explanations of topics discussed today, together with helpful illustrations, head over to www.heart-rhythm-center.com, where a full list of available publications on Amazon can be easily accessed. That's www.heart-rhythm-center.com. And please subscribe to the Heart Rhythm Center blog, as well as Dr. Williams' author page on Amazon, where his books discussing arrhythmias, pacemakers, and defibrillators are available in print and electronic Kindle versions.